This is Christ Together Radio. For the next hour, listen in as hosts Brett Larson and Ryan Cozy discuss how God is working in the Church of Western New York. God is on a mission in Buffalo, and we want you to hear about what is happening and where it's happening, and join in. So grab that second cup of coffee and listen in to Christ Together Radio.
Welcome to Christ Together Radio. I'm Brett Larson, the General Manager of WDCX Radio. Sitting alongside my co-host, when I say my, I don't mean I own you. But
you don't own me.
Nobody owns me.
Nobody owns
this
me.
This is Ryan Cozy you're hearing from. He's the chapel. He is the chapel.
I am the chapel.
He is the
all of it.
I cannot get your title.
You can't.
Ever.
So I'm going to see you if you can do it this week.
Yes. All right. He's a pastor of missional engagement at the chapel.
Close. Missional living. It's the same idea.
It's the same idea. You have to engage in it to live it.
That's touche.
You're going too far. I'm starting at the beginning.
Okay.
No, I'm just kidding. Pastor of missional living at the chapel. And Ryan's a friend, and just we're on mission together. And the purpose of this show is to highlight some of the things that God is doing throughout Western New York and throughout our nation. As we last week, we talked with John Blue from California.
Yeah.
And ex-Saber,
yes.
And Bruin, and had some great stories.
Very brief stint as a Saber,
yes.
As he shared, which was great. And then Chris Lagerlof was there, too.
Yeah.
So good guys out in Orange County.
Good guys from the Christ Together National network of churches and people here for gospel saturation. You'll hear us talk about gospel saturation, as you've probably, if you've heard this show, heard that term. And that term just means lots and lots of people knowing and coming to Christ.
Yeah.
Really? It just, in an area, it just means saturation, lots of people knowing Christ. So.
And I think today what will be fun is we're going to talk about different ways in which people come in contact with the gospel. And so we talk a lot about making sure that we're building relationships and we're bringing proclamation. But there are repeated ways in which we can tangibly bring the kingdom of God forward. And so I'm excited to learn a little bit more about what that looks like in different contexts.
Today. Yeah, in studio, we have Jeff Jones. And Jeff, are you the executive director of 716 Ministries? And we also have Julie Palmer, executive director of PATH. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, I want to make sure I get everybody's titles and everybody's thing right.
And PATH stands for?
People Against Trafficking Humans.
Okay.
Okay, and give us, now we have a minute and 45, so Jeff, start, just tell us quickly about what your ministry does.
Yeah, we are a community development organization here in Buffalo that does economic capacity and property revitalization. So we actually help take care of buildings, facilities, we rehab projects, we do job training through that, and we really empower a huge volunteer corps from the churches and from the outlying communities.
Mm-hmm. That sounds fabulous. And Julie, tell us quickly about PATH.
PATH is an organization, our mission is to end exploitation through awareness, action, and aftercare. So we raise awareness in the community, engage the community, call them into action, and then we have the PATH Enrichment Center, and that works with vulnerable, at-risk, and exploited women and children in Western New York community.
Wow, that's a lot to take in just a minute. But listen, we're going to be back. They're going to be joining us in studio for the next hour. We're going to talk about how churches and parachurch ministries can work together for gospel saturation. And we're going to get real. We're going to talk about some of the issues that we face as a big church in connecting these two points. Church, parachurch, Ryan, they can be a little bit dicey at times, right?
Yeah, there's challenges, and I think it's just a matter of helping people to understand how much we need one another to represent the kingdom well in this region, and I think it starts there.
Two great ministries. We're going to talk about them when we get back. Christ Together Radio, Ryan Cozy and Brett Larson, along with our special guests Jeff and Julie. We'll be back in just a minute or two here, and get on with our discussion.
Remember when R2-D2 had a special message for Obi-Wan? Well, the gospel is kind of like that, but it's not a secret, and it's from God, and it's life-changing, and, well, okay, so it's nothing like that, but it's really awesome, and God is doing great things in Western New York. Here's Ryan Cozy and Brett Larson.
Welcome back to Christ Together Radio. I'm Brett Larson, General Manager of WDCX, hosting alongside of Ryan Cozy today, who's the pastor of Missional Living at the Chapel. And Ryan is invited two of his friends into studio today to talk about what it looks like when the church works with parachurch organizations. Parachurch meaning ministries or organizations that are doing great things in the name of Christ who don't call themselves necessarily traditional church model, right, Ryan?
Yeah, yeah, that's a good way to describe it. Okay. So, yeah.
Well, we're just gonna start right in. Yeah. Just like we're sitting at a coffee shop, which we all have nice piping hot coffee, and
it's good.
We're just gonna talk about some of the issues that parachurch organizations face, maybe how things have changed over time, because I think the way our culture is now, that we're going to end up change. Maybe so the face of things might change.
Yeah. Well, and I think a good place to start is like how I got to know them.
Okay, let's do that.
So why don't we start there? So real quick, 716 Ministries, Jeff Jones, was formerly known as Westside Ministries.
That's right.
And what happened was, you know, and we talked about this on a couple of the shows leading up to today, about 8.5, 9 years ago, a gathering of churches began to get together, and we were influenced by a missiologist by the name of Dwight Smith, who began to challenge us as to what it would look like for every man, woman, and child to have repeated opportunities to hear, see, and respond to the gospel message of Jesus Christ. And so, you know, he kind of opened up a fire hose of just this is what it could look like. And when he began to challenge us, he said, what sort of geography are you going to take responsibility for? And a vast majority of us felt like it was all of Western New York. Yeah. At least a chunk that we could engage with regularly was Niagara County and Erie County. That's about 1.2 million people. And so as a research scientist, I start looking around going, okay, this was predominantly birthed in many respects out of suburban partnerships, which was fine. But if you start talking about 1.2 million people, you have to eventually look at urban context, and you have to say, man, what's going on there? And a big reality for many of us was we didn't know exactly what was going on. And so there was all this activity that began to be birthed, and there were some connections into the city, but not regularly. And so through a relationship with a friend of mine named John Lee, who was heavily involved in Houghton, he's involved in Jericho Road, he's involved in 716 Ministries. Through a relationship with him, a friend named Steve Shank, who's a pastor in the city, and then another friend, Jeremy Hazelton, who's a pastor at Village Church here at
right
Symphony
around the
Circle.
Corner.
Yeah. I continued to hear about Westside Ministries, which is now 716 Ministries. Mm-hmm. And just through a series of engagements with John, I was able to get to know 716 a little bit better. A big part of how I connected with them was they are a great kingdom organization that really does do a good job of property management and taking folks from urban areas, giving them meaningful employment, and watching that take shape in the city. It's pretty fun to see. Officed out of Lady of Loretto on the
right.
West Side.
Yeah.
It's been a couple of years since getting to know Jeff, and so the work that they're doing is pretty cool. I'm excited about it, and if you're doing urban-related ministry, you're going to bump into them. With Julie, it's been very recent. With PATH, we have a partnership at our church in connection with a handful of other churches called the Every Child Initiative. And with respect to Every Child, one of the things that kept coming up was, well, what about kids on the fringe? What about marginalized kids? What about kids that are victims of trafficking? Mm-hmm. And what I became aware of was, we immediately hear about sex trafficking or labor trafficking, and you kind of think international. Like, oh, that's probably
yeah,
bad. It's going on over there.
Yeah.
But the reality is that's a very real problem here in Western New York, and it affects not just refugees in the city. It affects indigenous poor in the region, and it also can affect suburban kids as well.
Wow.
And so this idea of seeing every man, woman, and child have repeated opportunities, what it requires of you is, one, you can't do it alone, okay? And then, two, when you're in a context that does not represent the whole of the geography, you need to start to humble yourself and sit at a table with folks and say, tell me about what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Help me understand what some common on-ramps are for partnership, and how can we better do that? And I'll be the first to tell you, I think in some ways we've done that really well, and in other ways we've got a lot to learn. And so that's probably going to be a part of today's conversation.
How about with Julie and Jeff? Have we done that well? I'm just kidding.
Well, we're going to find out.
Who's the one that gets to answer?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'll start. Julie, I have a question for you.
Sure.
Ryan mentioned that this really is a problem locally. And we know of a number of different, you know, national organizations that are kind of this issue is becoming more and more prevalent in the media and people are covering it a little more. As a local, I assume pretty much that's primarily your focus, right? Local,
correct.
What happens
Western
in the Western New York area. Is that this is really a big issue in Western New York? I mean, what does that look like? Because from somebody who's rather ignorant of it, locally speaking, we kind of drop our kids off at school. We have friends who their kids are safe. Everybody seems safe. Sure. So what's the issue?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's an issue enough that we've had to have a drop-in center providing support services. And unfortunately, we're filling our center with people in the community that have been exploited. And it can look in many forms. We have clients ranging from girls who were brought up in the suburbs through a series of abuse or bad situations or choices, ended up in the streets perpetrated by pimps and traffickers and ended up prostituting or sex trafficking on the streets. I have stories of girls who grew up in Clarence.
Wow.
Telling us about how they landed where they were. One girl who was a John purchased her and she was beaten and tortured to the point she thought she was going to die and said to us that she prayed and said, God, if you exist, have someone find me. And she was found and she's here. And she said PATH was the first place she felt safe to share that story. And we get that comment a lot by our clients, and that I just attribute to Jesus being present for sure.
Wow, that's a whole...
Western New York. I mean, that's right here in our backyard.
Wow, we need an hour to talk about that. And Jeff, I'm sure you have a tough job. It sounds like you pretty
much... Yes, I do.
It sounds, you know, from the way Ryan explained it, you pretty much do everything. Like Superman. He's like the Superman of Buffalo. No, but you help people with jobs. You help people with housing. And maybe just expand on what you do on a daily basis. What does it look like?
Yeah, our organization really is kind of an organization that supports a lot of other nonprofits. And so we're right in the middle of a lot of urban ministry because we're on site. So we have 20 employees. We minister to 14 other nonprofits. We're under contract with them. So I'm the one that makes sure that we're meeting the contract needs. And plus, too, we also we are mission partnered with those organizations. So we value the same things they value. We have a kingdom mindset. So we want to make sure that there's win-win relationships happening in these partnerships. What they really look like is... most ministries have locations, and so those locations need to be managed with maintenance, janitorial, rehab work. They're all on a shoestring budget, and so we want to help empower the local churches to help offset that. So we are also the caveat to oversee big volunteer groups, to do work projects, to help updates. And so we have a really good skilled team of people, and we have a wide variety of experience on our own staff, so that we can actually bring in people from all around the area of Western New York and help out these urban ministries through facilities management. And we also do a lot of it through job training. And so we have a whole contingent that does work readiness and soft skills, and that's been running since 2007. And we're fine-tuning that over the last year and a half. And so we've got a great highlights. We've rehabbed 26 properties, complete gut rehabs.
Wow.
We've put $1.8 million into the community just in buildings alone. So that's been pretty amazing. That's since 2002. And really, we oversee over 1,000 volunteer hours a year. And so we are able to really help out some locations. And we manage over 220,000 square feet of space. So we can handle large scale, small scale. And we're very scalable. That's one thing that we like doing. We serve a church on the east side that's, you know, just getting up and running, wanting to turn into a community center. So we're trying to bring people in there. Mm-hmm. We serve another building that we own at Loretto Center that's got like, you know, 7 occupants, churches, nonprofits, all sharing space, which gets really fun. And we serve a couple other pretty good sized churches that are just wanting to utilize their space because their budget doesn't allow the full use for their own ministry. And they realize that life is better when you share it. And they want to utilize the space for the kingdom and not let it sit dormant for a while. So we're there to try to make all that happen for them. And our posture is really that of serving those who serve. So we don't want to come in that we're taking ownership of anything. We want to come in with keeping the vision of that location in mind and making sure that they can stay on point and not worry about the things that they're not good at.
So both of these organizations, great organizations representing Christ in the community. I assume with most churches, okay, if you get funding from churches or if you're working on getting funding from churches, most churches have some sort of missions budget, some sort of outreach budget. Ryan, we've talked about how the United States is no longer the big sender of missionaries. It's no longer the big dog on the street who doesn't need anybody sending people back.
We're now the third largest mission field in the world.
That's correct. So I say that because obviously missions, we've seen it in our own context, and I'm sure it's across the country this way, missions budgets have shrunk. The money just for church in general is just, it's not the glorious 90s anymore or the glorious 80s where, you know, big mega churches, everybody was just doing really well. So missions budgets have changed. But you still, you know, I'll kick this over to Julie. You still have needs. And you, I assume you rely on, you know, churches to kind of partner with you in vision for the sake of the gospel. So what are some of the real hurdles that you're facing now as a ministry who's what we call a parachurch ministry, but dependent on church missions budgets, who are, you know, the churches are struggling with those.
Absolutely. And really, that's a great way to start because we formed out of a church. Our organization formed out of a Wesleyan church, and several Wesleyan churches have supported us. And really, without that, I don't think PATH would exist as it exists right now. And so that's extremely important to our success. A lot of what we find with foundations and grant seeking is that they like you to have been around a while, and they want to see a lot of numbers and a lot of things that you really need people to invest when you're still new and really take part in seeing it as something that people can benefit from. So I think, you know, as far as the barriers, I think it's like you said, I think it's interesting when you go to missions events or festivals and churches, and a lot of it is global minded, and that makes sense because that's how we see missions. But I see the work that our volunteers and staff and people are doing in the city through this ministry or other ministries like Jeff's as mission work. We're being missionaries right in our own community. And sometimes I think we may not see it as that way because it looks different in our community.
Right. Ryan, I wanted to kind of kick this over to you from the church perspective.
Yeah.
Is this something, I mean, so it's this weird connection with gospel saturation, the church, parachurch. We tend to look at missions as a, or local missions as in Julie's context, as kind of a sideshow. Or a side issue, like the church is here in the community, and then we're going to kind of kick some money over to this issue. Is it difficult, or how do you think it should look where churches and parachurch come together for gospel saturation within a certain area? Like take Western New York, for instance. Yeah.
Well, I guess my biggest observation over the last couple of years is that if churches would be able to kind of carve out time to walk in relationship with these ministries, they would really understand that the common alignment between us is incredibly strong. Mm-hmm. And so that's, you know, for me, I wish I had more hours in the week to spend with people like this. So I've been very fortunate to be in a position at a church where we do value this. But a big part of it is we have to do our due diligence to cultivate relationships. And so that takes time. And so we're constantly fighting against, in my mindset, in our culture, we're fighting against the microwave, the idea that PATH can't, you know, handle all sex trafficking issues within 10 months. Mm-hmm. You know, that's like what happened. And it's like, this is a lifelong, like you give your life to this. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for me, I think cultivating relationship and understanding that slow is fast in the long run, like you really have to walk with these folks to really understand. Because if it turns into a transactional relationship, the depth of the relationship is that checks get cut, but they get cut for a certain period of time, and then without any relationship, it's okay, well, that was good. And that doesn't even speak to time and talent, the mobilization of everyday people, of their time and of their talents. Like, people, they could awaken to the fact that this ministry is, I mean, this makes my heart go pitter-patter. What can I do to serve? What, so this aspect of time, talent, and treasure, you know, it gets caught in the flow of this. And I think that's a very strong challenge that we face.
Well, we're going to be back in just a minute. We're out of time. We need to take a quick break. We're going to be back in just a minute. More with Jeff and Julie from Local Ministries and how parachurch and church can work together for the sake of gospel saturation right here on Christ Together Radio.
Email your questions to Brett and Ryan about anything you've heard or just about anything you can think of. Send them to ctr@wdcxradio.com. That's ctr@wdcxradio.com.
We're back on Christ Together Radio. Brett Larson and Ryan Cozy hosting with you today and every week. We've had some great initial broadcasts, and I really am passionate about the broadcast today, about parachurch and church ministries, about the way the church just shows up in different ways, Ryan, in different organizations when God puts a passion on somebody's heart within the church, the community church of believers, to do something outside of what their church might do. And it all comes together for gospel saturation, doesn't it?
It does. And I think, you know, helping churches understand that walking in relationship with these ministries can provide an incredible outlet toward the mobilization of everyday people.
It can. One of the issues we have here on Christ Together Radio is our best content happens between the breaks.
It's true.
Because the mics get shut off and everybody relaxes and, I don't know, good stuff comes out.
Yes.
And so we're going to actually try to flush some of that out right now.
Good.
And Jeff, you were saying something in the break about, you know, church issues or issues with parachurch and church ministries and stuff like you do, and how churches sometimes look at it as a threat. Expand on that a little bit.
Yeah, no, that's good. And a little background is we have three pastors on our staff, just in our organization. One's an inner city pastor. He's been doing it for a long, long, long time. Another one's a church planner with a denomination in North Buffalo, and then we have a non-denominational associate pastor. And we all love the church, and my wife and I personally have been involved in church staffs as soon as we got back from our honeymoon 14 years ago. So we have a really good, healthy leadership on our organization that has a high value for church involvement. And what we've experienced in our organization is the healthy model of discipleship happening and leading people into service organizations that are nonprofits. And so it's almost like out of the church comes parachurch, not vice versa. So like there is some history that people might have of a misnomer of parachurch organizations that they exist because the church isn't doing a good job. But the reality is they should be existing because the church is doing a great job at discipling and casting into a vision that God has seared on somebody's heart that's sitting in your congregation, and they don't know how to do that within these church walls because it doesn't look anything like what the current ministries are in the church. And so they'll start up something like, we need to do human trafficking. Somebody's got to rescue and help redeem what is going on in the world. Well, your church staff or model might not be equipped to actually be that covering for that ministry, but you can raise and release that leader and support that leader over the longevity. And that's what healthy parachurch is.
But sometimes it's seen as a threat. Is it not?
I mean, anytime you can possibly take away people's money, people's time, those are both equity roles in a church, and now you're asking them to go spend that somewhere else. Yeah, it could definitely be a threat, and that's natural. I mean,
it's survival issues.
Yeah. It is, but you know what? God's kingdom is so much bigger, right? If he holds the whole world in our hands, then a dollar over here in this piece of the kingdom and a dollar in your sandbox kingdom or whatever, you know, it might be. I'm trying not to be rude. I love you all out there. But it's really, God is so much bigger than just what our small models can be.
You said something interesting that piqued my curiosity. You said discipleship is happening within what you guys do. Ryan, do you think a pastor somewhere could cringe maybe a little bit and say, well, isn't that the church's job?
Well, yeah, I guess so. But what I would try to help them to understand is what is the goal that we are all working toward? And so if God is in a mission, or he's on a mission, Missio Dei, and he wants his glory to be all throughout the earth, we have to submit ourselves to his mission. And what that open, I mean, that, that will require a desire to see every part of the geography that God has placed us in. It's going to require of us to be broken to see that glory refracted in all of a region. And so you just have to, you know, in some ways, yes, you have to walk with a pastor to understand that this is a great, this could be an incredible outlet of time, of talent, of treasure for the glory of God to happen in our region. There is a very legitimate challenge, which is that there are people that are pastoring today that are wondering how they're going to pay their bills. Right. And I understand that. But I think when we start operating out of a position of fear, we really have to press in deeply to pursue intimacy with God and trusting with an open hand that, God, you can do this. And I understand the criticism could be, well, geez, you're a pastor at a large church and I get that.
Yeah, but, I understand, but Julie's taking all my nursery workers because Path is, you know, so emotionally engaging.
So, but here's what people may not know. By nature, I'm not a big church guy. I mean, I raised support for 7 years prior
to... Does that need
to
be edited out?
No. I mean, I love the church I'm at. I'm not apologetic about being at the church I'm at.
Great church.
But at the same time, like, I know the pain of raising financial support. I did it for 7 years. And I have laid before the Lord in my living room floor in my one-bedroom apartment, crying out to God, Lord, I don't know how you're going to make this bill. How are we going to pay the phone bill? I've had those moments more than once. And God has been faithful. He has provided, but it's required of me a deeper intimacy to trust him. And so that, I mean, it's a pain point. Absolutely. We need to have this conversation. Absolutely. But at the end of the day, you know, and this is going to be hard to say, but I'm going to say it. The survival of that local expression is in the hands of the Lord. And if we pursue the advancement of the glory of God in our region, we have to be open-handed with the outcome of what he'll want to do with the place that we've been entrusted to lead.
Julie's about to explode over there. She's agreeing with you.
Oh, okay.
I am.
And I'm going
to
get it.
And we're going to slide around to the other side of the table.
Yeah.
Hold on a second.
Not close enough to punch you. No, 100% couldn't endorse that more. And I think what I've had to learn in ministry as a leader on all those issues is that if God is calling me to do something, then I have to come back to that surrender every day that he's going to provide for it. And that's, I guess, you know, I don't like to seem naive or keep things simple, but I sometimes feel like in ministry we make it harder than it has to be. That we sometimes, the fear piece, worry about, well, my church needs to get money or my ministry needs enough money. But I just really have to go under the belief that if he wants me to continue to serve the trafficked and exploited and the marginalized in Western New York, then he knows what that costs me to do it. And he's either going to speak it into people to give, or he's going to provide in some way that we need. And I see in relationships with churches or other ministries that we get in the way, that we as human beings get in the way of that, and then business leads the spirit instead of the spirit leading the business.
Ryan, how do you navigate as a church who has a very large external push, and you fund a lot of ministries, and the chapel does a lot for Western New York and that area? How do you manage the tension or the responsibility, that's a better word, of people coming to you with ideas, with their, we call it missionary syndrome, where it's like everybody has to, I have this thing and everybody's got to get behind what I want to do. How do you manage that as you get a lot of ideas, I'm sure? And how do you, so it's easy to say, well, you know, take what you're passionate about and make it happen, and then somebody's passionate about saving squirrels from the streets or something, whatever. And how do
that's
you?
It's a very unique passion.
I tried to get something ridiculous so that
squirrels are squirrels.
Well, I tried not to step on anybody's toes, so I got something that probably wasn't in existence. But how do you manage? You know, the people come to you that feel like this is what God wants them to do, and you have to fund it, or else you don't care about the gospel.
Yeah. So, I would say, well, let me start with this is why I'm grateful for my friend who's now with the Lord, Daryl Largess. A big part of what we ran into a number of years ago was we had a variety of ministries who are all, I mean, any ministry that comes to us that's doing work, this is great. But the reality is we may be a large church, but mm-hmm. we don't have the ability to fund all initiatives.
Right.
And so a number of years ago, Pastor Darrell, who's now with Jesus, we sat down together with another friend of ours, and we tried to come up with, and this was his phrase, and I go back to this regularly, an objective way to make a subjective decision. And what was birthed out of that was called the Kingdom Come Initiative. And so there are people who apply for funding, and we basically have a way in which internally, through prayerful consideration and through mission examination, we try to align our mission, vision, and values with the other organization's mission, vision, and values, and we come up with ways to rank the alignment. And then through that, we kind of trust the process and trust through seeking the Lord who we're going to partner with and who we won't. Now, here's what that doesn't mean. If people don't get funded, it does not mean mm-hmm. that we're not for what they're doing. In many instances, there has been strong mission, vision, value alignment and not enough money given the existing partnership base that we're committed to and right. trying to advance in others. And so that's always a tension. And, you know, to be honest, this last year, you know, we had to have some of those conversations where we say, hey, we're going to dial down our support here so that we can start supporting some new initiatives. Those are never easy conversations because you still love the work that other people are doing. But it's a challenge. I think we manage it well, but I know we've made mistakes.
Well, I would be concerned if you said you didn't make mistakes.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
but good. Let's go back to Jeff. We're going to pick on you a little bit.
Great.
All right. Your ministry... I would think, and I want to be careful here because I don't want to make Julie mad at me because she's pretty tough. No, but your ministry to me seems like a longer explanation.
Mm-hmm.
Not that yours is easier. That's what I'm saying, but it's pretty straightforward. We got to stop human trafficking. I mean, it's a pretty dramatic, shocking reality that's in Western New York. You've had a different road. It's a long road. It's got lots of tentacles going all different ways.
Right.
What are some of the challenges you face in dealing with connecting with churches to support what you're doing?
Great question. So we've been doing this since 2002, and it has evolved. It's changed shape quite a bit in the sense that we started out doing housing rehabs, and now we're doing a whole slew of things. The majority of what we're doing is actually facilities, common use centers, and trying to bring people together. So I guess a good example is yesterday we had what we call a tenant meeting at one of our facilities. So we invited all the tenants. It has 7 tenants and its home church. So it's got 8 organizations using one address. And they're all doing kingdom work. And so you know, you have basic challenges. You have parking challenges. You have, you know, the heat's not high enough in my place, or the heat's too high, or, you know, you have the elevator going out. You have rent negotiations constantly within that, and everyone has different demands in those negotiations. And then you have the Source Church that has its own agenda, its own 1-year, 3-year, 5-year goals that it's trying to hit, and it's asking you to fulfill them. So we're right there in the middle of all of those organizations' operation. And so it's finding those healthy conversations because, you know, when you're not able to do the ministry that you want to do because you think your building's not allowing that to happen, that causes a huge tension for any leader of any nonprofit, whether it's a church or not. And so we're trying to navigate those relationships, and we're kind of the broker between the two parties, and we're there to provide some kind of framework of a healthy conversation, a framework of what that agreement could look like, and then we love being solution-minded. So really, I guess the challenges are juggling everyone's wants to compare to what's reality.
Sounds like that's a continuing thread.
Yeah.
It's just limited ability to, whether it be resources, whether it be facilities or any other kind of necessity that it takes to run these is mm-hmm. how do you navigate limited time, resource, and ability with
right.
You know, what you feel like God is calling you to do.
I do agree. What I would say, mm-hmm. though, is I think it'll be helpful for us maybe in this next segment to have a conversation about. So we're talking about, in this conversation, organizational assets.
Right.
The church organizational. But if we begin to shift the conversation to the distribution of the church, of everyday people, then that conversation, I think, is way more robust.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that that's where churches are, you know, I'm waking up to this. I'm getting a greater sense of this. I think that organizationally there's a lot that we want to do and we're going to do. But then when it comes to discipleship, mm-hmm. and the actual the ability to help an everyday follower of Christ understand mm-hmm. that they can join God on his mission and what that may right. require of them
right.
is engaging in these ministries.
Right.
That's a completely different level yeah. of partnership. And that's where I think we can have an honest conversation about the full saturation of the gospel in a region.
Okay, before we start that, because we're going to have to take a quick break, but before, Julie, give your website so that in case we miss anybody that's got to leave us or whatever for your organization.
Sure, it's pathofwny.org.
Pathofwny.org, and it's Path Ministries, People Against Trafficking Humans. And Jeff, your website?
716ministries.org.
We love the 716. So 716 Ministries.
Plural, yep.
It's not in the restaurant, down the new restaurant downtown.
No.
No, I'm just kidding.
But they would love to be the property managers.
You bet. I'm sure you would. I'm sure you would. Well, listen, we're going to take just a real quick break and be right back. We have Julie Palmer, who's the executive director of Path Ministries, and Jeff Jones from 716 Ministries. I'm Brett Larson and Ryan Cozy. We're hosting Christ Together Radio for you every week, Sundays at 11 a.m. Listen, if you want to catch some of our older broadcasts, some of the broadcasts that we've done in the past several months that we've been doing this, go to WDCXradio.com, go to the programs link. It's right at the top of your screen. It says programs. Go to Christ Together Radio, click on it, and you can get old programs. There's an email form there where you can let us know what's happening or ask questions and let us know what you think about the show. And also, if something's just, you got to want to dig deeper into something, if you want to connect with Ryan, with Christ Together, or just let us know what you think. Hey, we'll hear what you have to say. Just send us nice ones, though. We don't like nasty ones.
Mean ones hurt.
They hurt. We have feelings, too. Anyway, we'll be back in just a minute. Christ Together Radio right here on WDCX.
This is Christ Together Radio with WDCX General Manager Brett Larson and Pastor Ryan Cozy, Pastor of Missional Living at The Chapel.
Welcome back, Christ Together Radio. I'm Brett Larson, along with co-host of Christ Together, Ryan Cozy. He's the pastor of Missional Living at the Chapel. And we're talking about parachurch / church relationships. And this segment, we want to dig right in. We are going to probably need the whole segment to talk about this next issue that Ryan set up for us before our break. Talking about some real pain points in the church. But before we do that, those pain points come out of the very good thing, right, Ryan, that the church is supposed to send people out, people,
yeah.
not just organizationally help.
Yeah.
But as the church, we're made up of people who bear the image of Christ. And as we go, that image touches everything that we're involved in, right?
Yeah. And that's where I think we can then begin to have an honest conversation about, you know, we could actually see a region saturated with the gospel. So I think that one of the big challenges that that you have to try to envision people toward, and it to me, you know, with the research that I've collected over the years, it's not an issue of church size, meaning that this problem exists in mega churches, it exists in church plants, it exists in church repurposes, it exists in traditional churches, you know, that have been around 50, 60, 100 years. When you try to envision someone to understand that beyond the organizational assets of the church collected, which is a very powerful thing, mm-hmm. there's this second level of a conversation, which is, and what is the Spirit compelling you to do to get involved? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, this may take the form of neighboring well. Okay, we talk about the intentional relationship building on your own street, and that's something that the Lord has put on our heart, just to be, we can be way better neighbors. But then there's this aspect of, okay, well, that's your geography of influence, like your neighborhood. But what about your sphere of influence? What about the things that God has put in you that make your heart go pitter-patter, right? And so how are you responding to those passions. And a lot of times, and when we collect data on churches, people, one of the saddest data points that I look at is the reality that many people don't know their spiritual giftedness. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a big part of, you know, it's a very simple question of what makes you come alive, and then what is your responsibility to pursue God and what makes you come alive. I actually think that there are people that if they found out that hey, this organization that manages properties is also a part of providing livable, sustainable wages for people in the city, mm-hmm. because this organization exists, and they're helping to maintain the city, over 200,000 square feet of property. That's an interesting conversation to have with someone, and to say, and you could be a part of helping in that. Or, you know, trafficking is real. And a girl from Tonawanda, I just was listening to a radio segment yesterday on the way into work, and it was a public radio segment on a girl who was trafficked from Tonawanda. Well, you know, you start dialing into that, your sons and your daughters may live there, that you can have a meaningful difference in this. But that is a different conversation than I write a check, our church manages those assets, and we move them out. That's a necessary part of what we're doing, but it's only one part of what we're doing. And so I think that it produces a conversation that creates pain points, which mm-hmm. is, okay, so how, as ministries that are doing good work, how do we better mobilize people to exercise concern for these things? Because this is how I think saturation happens. I think as God puts the temple on the road, that's where we go, and we bring salt and light, that Matthew 5, salt and light everywhere we go. And yet, I think having that conversation and helping churches understand that these types of ministries are not a threat. They are a key to the advancement of the gospel in the region. I think that's a big issue.
How do you take, and maybe Julie, you can jump in here. How do you take a heart desire? Listening to Ryan talk, probably all of us want to jump in and help. Mm-hmm. There's a desire of the heart there. Mm-hmm. However, there's a reality too. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, ministries, parachurch and regular, struggle for help. Mm-hmm. They struggle for volunteers, bodies. So how do you take a heart desire and turn that into real action where people take time out of their schedule to come to PATH and help?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one of the models that we have at our organization is that we don't just want a body that's coming in to serve us. We actually want people that we can also be investing back in, so that when they're ministering to our clients and investing their time and talent, that they are also gaining a reward, an eternal reward. And so I think one of the things that our organization does is spends a lot of time investing in our volunteers. And we've been incredibly fortunate. The individuals that are volunteering in our organization give way above and beyond what we had anticipated. And so I think it's a investment where we're all together collectively trying to pour into each other. And so sometimes it's just getting the person engaged and then them really seeing. One of the things I always say is people say, oh, I don't know what I could do, or I don't know what I can offer. And I always say to them, let me get to know you, learn what your giftings are, and I can guarantee you I can find a way for God to use it in an organization.
Ryan, she said something just interesting there. We see you said across your survey that you do across the country that spiritual giftedness is kind of something that people don't pay attention to or don't know a lot about. This is a way that you can figure out your spiritual gift. She just said, Julie just said, you have a name, Julie, just said that.
Sure,
that girl over there.
Sorry,
said,
I'm called worse.
Yeah, okay. Then she, good. I haven't. No. No, Julie was saying that she can take some time with somebody and they can actually discover their spiritual giftedness, and that right. should excite a church, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that, you know, again, you would think that if people could do anything well within local church, one of those things that we could do is build relationships effectively. Right. But the reality is any sort of interpersonal engagement tends to be difficult because much of what we do is transactional. Mm-hmm. Like I'm interfacing with you because I want something or because you need something. Mm-hmm. And just the idea of disarming someone by saying, if I get to know you, I can plug in. a more effective way. I know that God could use you. I just have to get to know you a little bit better. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, as our culture continues to become more and more engaged in things like social media and technology, which I'm not anti those things per se, but I'm just saying, like, they hinder our ability to look people in the eye, engage in a relationship, and go, yeah, let's figure this out together.
With this election season, I'm becoming more and more anti-social
media.
That's another day.
Well, yeah. one of our goals and what we do with our volunteering, and Julie brought up volunteering, it's the entry point, really.
Yeah.
I mean, one of our best contractors, he's got a phrase that says, just show up and see what God does. Just show up.
Yeah.
And that really is a part of kind of the mantra of who we are as an organization. And I think, too, really what the church is calling people to be in the part of discipleship that's figuring out how to do ministry is you got to try it. You got to do it. Faith without works. Love your neighbor. All these things that are part of who we are as followers of Jesus, you actually have to do it. Mm-hmm. You have to just show up to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a wonderful thing. When you do that and you step out of those comfort zones, you step out of the old models of just sitting and just trying to learn and be about yourself, and you start giving in service, then it really becomes, God starts activating that faith. God starts activating his call in your life because you're doing it. And I think that's what's key, is just showing up.
And I also think that if it came from the leadership of the church, it would seep down into the people. I mean, I still even have a hard time getting a conversation with a church leader, whether it's to partner in some way, just even having a conversation, because I completely agree. If we don't have relationship, then how's that partnership going to make any sense in the kingdom experience?
Yeah.
That's interesting. We talked about this in our break, so I'm going to bring it up in a second. Be a surprise. I'm an elder at a local church, and one of the big issues that we face in the local church is just volunteerism is dropped and off the. I mean, it's just not even on the charts anymore. It doesn't even show up. People are busy. We live in a consumeristic culture to where they expect to come to church, and it's just kind of like an event you go to. It's not some. It's not a place where you engage. And our culture craves community, yet we don't really invest in anything to give to give community. So there's this big issue in the church. And so from a local church perspective, you kind of see some tension points, some fear that exists there between, well, if all my people are doing external things, then home base falls apart. And the reality is we need money to have a pastor, and our pastor needs to get paid, and all this kind of stuff exists. So we don't have a nursery worker. We don't have a children's worker or a volunteer. We can't even get ushers. And so how do we encourage people to go volunteer somewhere when we can't get them to do anything in our church? It's a real issue.
Yeah, it is. And I think, you know, to be honest, this ties in nicely with a paper that recently came out by Dr. Stetzer. And he was just talking about the reality of the nominalization of the Christian faith. That there's not a lot to be gained to be a nominal Christian in America anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think what's happening is, you know, you see right now, you know, demographically speaking, we sit over the fastest free fall of evangelical Christianity that the colonialized United States has ever seen. So it's a free fall, and we will be Canada, and then we will be Western Europe, provided that nothing changes. And now my hope is that something changes in this. But I think a part of what you do run into from time to time, and I'm a father of four kids, is how do you manage the tension of making sure that you're stewarding family well, make sure that you're as the moment you sign your kid up for an activity, it exponentially increases the more kids that sign up.
Yeah.
But you know, these are hard conversations that ultimately you hope that believers can have because the Great Commission is pretty important. And it applies to those who have fully submitted themselves to Jesus. What are the implications of that? Does it mean that you don't sign up for things? No, it doesn't. But it means that you take the gospel where you go. The hope and the prayer is that people would truly be broken by the lostness in this geography. I think that you cannot be broken for the lostness and the brokenness in this geography. If you are not pressing in to deep and intimate time with God. And I think that that's in a consumeristic culture, that is one of the things that I think Satan loves, is that he can distract us. Mm-hmm. He can distract us from pursuing intimacy with God. Mm-hmm. And the outflow of that intimacy with God, I think, is you look at the brokenness, you look at the lostness in this geography with a different set of glasses. Mm-hmm. And we just need more kingdom citizens to put those glasses on. That's a prayer that I have regularly.
I think
that was
really good. But I think one of the issues that the overwhelming issue we've hit on it is understanding your spiritual giftedness. Mm. Because God has not left his church ill-equipped. Mm. And I think a lot of times we have people doing things or doing too broad of things or doing too many things or involved in things that they're really not gifted at. Mm. And God is going to properly equip his church. And so when you figure out your spiritual giftedness, instead of just volunteering for anything and everything that comes your way, mm-hmm. you become very good at something and God will well equip his church. I really believe that. It's just sometimes we need to listen and we need to study and learn. And it all comes back to intimacy with God. We've talked about this from day one with Dan Trippi on the show.
That's
what fuels the church.
Yeah, I do. I believe it does start there. I would also, again, because we're talking to everyday people on the radio and as we're doing this on this show. So you're driving around right now and you may be going, man, I'm in my car and going, what do I do to get involved in stuff like this? Can I just challenge you mm-hmm. in the car? Pick a geography in this region that you've not engaged. Mm-hmm. Just pick one and drive through it regularly. Not once. Don't say, hey, I drove the east side. It was pretty crazy. No, just drive through it regularly. Pray over it. Mm-hmm. Observe it. Continue to press into having intimacy with God. But drive through the places of this region that you maybe aren't familiar with and pray over them. I think that that's what broke my heart for the east side. I mean, that was my story, was I live close to that area, but I thought, I don't know anything about this other side of Main Street. So, you know, God, I'm going to take time. And as many days as I could, I'd pick up my coffee at Tim Hortons on Main Street there across from the station, the subway station, and I'd just drive every little nook and cranny of the east side. And I thought, Lord Jesus, something has to happen here. I mean, there's good ministry work that's going on, but the renaissance of Buffalo is not hitting this part of the city. And what could I as a believer do? And God broke my heart for that geography. I think having that intimacy and then putting yourself in positions where you're learning about contexts other than what you might be used to, they position you a different way, I think. Hmm.
Jeff, we just have a minute left in our program. So just share some of your needs that you have, maybe a website again, and closing thoughts.
Yeah, we love people to volunteer with us. So if you want to show up on a Saturday or Thursday night, check out our website, 716ministries.org. We have calendar of events. So you can contact our office through mm-hmm. that as well. And we'd love to hear from you. If you are part of a church that wants advice on how to better use their facility or get help out, we would love to do that and show up and talk you through that. So that's what we're about.
Julie?
Yeah, absolutely. And we can always use volunteers at our enrichment center. Again, check out our website for that. Obviously, people that want to get behind what we're doing. So pathofwny.org would be a way to reach us. Or you can call us at 716-601-5678.
Brett Larson and Ryan Cozy for Christ Together Radio. Tune in next week. We'll be talking about the same topic, same issue of parachurch church, but maybe take a little different approach with it. And I believe Julie and Jeff are going to join us again, along with some other people that are going to stop in the studio. We're figuring all that out. We'll see you next week, 11 a.m., Christ Together Radio. Ryan Cozy and Brett Larson saying goodbye.
Thanks for listening to Christ Together Radio. To join in, email Brett and Ryan at ctr@wdcxradio.com. Join us next week for more great discussion about Christ together.